Welcome to Regenerative Mindset. In this podcast, we'll explore fresh ideas and inspiring stories from trusted voices who share practical wisdom on bringing positive change to our lives, our society, and our world. I'm your host, Stacey Pollice. As a psychologist, regenerative farmer, and climate activist, I've developed a deep curiosity for thriving ecosystems. Whether it's on my avocado ranch in Southern California or in the ways we engage with each other. Join me as I chat with brilliant guests who challenge our thinking and expand our understanding of how we can live more sustainably, healthfully, and regeneratively, to give back more than we take. Together, we'll see how personal healing can create a ripple effect that reaches our communities and even the earth beneath our feet. So let's get curious together. If you need a hopeful voice for the future, you'll love today's episode with Sarah Guillermo. As the CEO of Ignite, she has dedicated her career to expanding women's power and influence nationwide through teaching advocacy and organizing political engagement for young women. Sarah shares her story of growing up as a Filipina-American immigrant, being a breast cancer survivor, and having a child using IVF with surrogacy, highlighting how these challenges shaped her activism for underrepresented groups. We delve into how Ignite's programming teaches young women how issues they care about can turn into policy because, as she says, the personal is political. We discuss the importance of educating youth on civic organizing, the value of intersectional leadership, and mobilizing voters. Tune in for a conversation filled with insights on leadership, demystifying political activism, and Sarah's vision for an inclusive democracy where we all feel safe enough to fully participate. Hi, Sarah. Welcome.
Hi, Stacey. It's so nice to be here.
Oh my gosh. I'm really excited. I've been so looking forward to our time together. And I don't want to waste a minute with you really telling us about how you came to be the CEO of Ignite, this incredible organization that you're going to unpack at this most important time. We're recording this before the election, 2024 election. So, you know, just sort of demystifying politics a little bit and understanding the mechanisms. But I would love to start with your story, which is also so interesting and absolutely leads to how you got here.
Well, thank you so much again for having me. I am Sarah Guillermo, the proud CEO of Ignite, the largest and most diverse young women's political leadership organization. And I started running for office in the first grade. I was 6 years old, and there was an opportunity at Ayers Elementary to be the classroom organizer, and I really wanted to help organize the classroom because I felt like I was already doing the job. And so I ran for classroom organizer. Fun fact, I won, and I actually got to represent my class with all of the other classes across the entire school. And so we got to work with other grades, and I was always like kind of looking around the table, and I'm like, wow, there's not a lot of girls here, not a lot of people that look, you know, darker than me or as dark as me, or just have different types of families. And so a lot of the conversation for the boys at the table was always about the annual fifth grade camping trip. And so I was just confused. I started my confusion about young women in leadership at 6 years old. And so I continued my education journey and spent a lot of time in different leadership positions, either that I ran for or was appointed to. And really started to see that same table get manifested in different communities that I was sitting in, whether it was my college community or my grad school community, or even just as an adult within my larger community. And so when I met our founder, Ann Moses, back in 2009, and she had shared the whole idea about Ignite, we are both social workers, and the strengths-based perspective of how to reach young people, young women specifically, as they are building their own ambition, as they are building their own identities at 13, 17, 21 years old. If we could reach them at that moment in time, what that would do to shift their trajectory as young women, really functionally serving as viable political leaders and political actors across the country.
Wow. Okay. So you started at six. And it sounds like Ignite, does that start at 14, 15, are you saying, like in high school?
Yeah, a majority of our programs start at high school. We do have some curriculum for younger ages that parents can download and do at their kitchen table. But a majority of the programs that we deliver start in high school.
Is the program offered through schools, or would somebody have to seek it out? I'm just kind of curious about how you reach these age groups and how it has expanded from where it began. I'm assuming it began in the Bay Area. Am I right?
Yeah, Ann and I are both Bay Area folks. And so she started teaching at a high school in San Francisco, and I was teaching at a high school in East Oakland and had started the program there. And so the first year was about 80 students, and now we are reaching over 40,000. But the way in which participants have been coming to us through the school model is we have a lot of partnerships with different schools across the country where educators or even students themselves bring Ignite to their school community. And so we partner with them. We train them on our curriculum. The curriculum is everything from how to build your own leadership style, how to understand the two-party system, understanding the mechanics of voting, the history of voting, how to activate your peers around voting, especially if you're not 18 yet. And so we have a lot of that different curriculum that we train educators on and even students, and they deliver it in their schools, either as an after-school program or potentially as an enrichment activity that they can offer throughout the school day.
So if someone was interested in and didn't have it at their school, there's a way that you could, after hearing this conversation, they could...
Yeah, they could literally just go to the website and like download an interest form, and then our team takes it from there. And like we kind of co-design with the school what makes the most sense for their school community. So you can imagine right now leading up to the election, a lot of schools have been like, how can we talk about the election? How can we talk about voting? And so that's been a heavy brunt of where the curriculum has been focused in on delivery across the country. I imagine after post-election, it might lead to advocacy. And so we have curriculum for that as well. And so it will really be based on what the school community wants to partner with Ignite on, because what happens in one high school in California is totally different than what's going to happen in Texas and what's going to happen in New York. And so we want to make sure that we are meeting the moment for the students that we're serving.
The word advocacy is a word I know, but I want to hear how you define it per Ignite.
We really think about advocacy as the first step to action. And so we're learning right now that a lot of our participants really care about a number of different issues. A lot of things that they have experienced are really drawing upon what they want to do in the world. And so they are wanting to serve as advocates. And what does that mean for them? It means that they are using their voices. And for Ignite, our advocacy is really functioning around our legislative advocacy. And we are teaching young people how to understand how a bill becomes law. We are teaching them how to communicate with a legislator. We are teaching them how to pick a bill that they care about. And if the bill doesn't exist, how they can co-create that with their state legislator. And we have a number of different young women who have really walked into this path of legislative advocacy. And then we actually take them to their state capitals where they're able to practice all of these different skill sets and actually advocate for a bill that they care about.
So can you give us an example of somebody bringing an issue into legislation?
Yes, Stacey, there's so many stories that I can share, but the one that feels most on top of mind for me actually just got signed into law at the end of September. We have this phenomenal student named Shreya. She is a dual high school and community college student right now, where she also serves as a student trustee. And she came with us to Ignite the Capitol in 2023 and started to learn what this process was going to look like. She was really passionate about reproductive rights. What did it actually mean to create a bill? What did it mean to advocate for it? And then what did it mean for you to teach other people about it? Which is all the things, the skill sets that she learned from going to Ignite the Capitol. So she went back to her district and she worked with her assembly member and she got to work on this bill called Assembly Bill 2229, which is called the Know Your Period Bill. And she got 750 signatures to get it introduced into the assembly. And she spent so much time and energy working on this bill. And she is 16 years old. And as I said, at the end of September, this bill was signed into law. And so now students across the state of California, because of Shreya and her phenomenalness, all students are going to be able to receive comprehensive menstrual education, which is a core gap in what we're understanding to be in the school systems right now. And so we can thank Shreya. My daughter is going to receive this actually when she's in school. So I'm really excited about that.
Okay. So what that means is she felt there was a gap in young girls and then young women's education on how the menstrual cycle works and even in terms of reproduction so that they're not blindsided and end up in a situation where they've created a child and they don't know why or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, it's everything under the sun around reproductive health. And so there is a lot of pieces just to think about, like how many days do students miss, specifically young girls miss because of their period? What's the stigma around your period? What are the different economic ramifications of that as you get older? And so I think the deep piece that she really wanted to bridge the gap on was building that understanding at a really early level so that folks could start to really understand it. And I mean, if you start to look at where girls are starting to get their periods in this generation, it's gotten younger and younger. And so really starting to tackle this at the elementary age versus not tackling it at all at middle or high school.
Right. You know, what's interesting is I know internationally, women and girls miss out on education because of menstrual cycle and the access or affordability of menstrual products and whether that should be provided in school or not. And for those that don't have the money for it, that's a huge obstacle to education for women and girls.
Yeah, that is actually a huge component of our advocacy work that we have done across the country and have been partnering with an organization called period.org that has been basically axing the tampon tax so that girls and students can actually have access to pads and tampons for free on their campuses and just the availability of that and what that would mean for them to actually be able to stay at school and learn.
Well, that is an amazing example, and Shreya sounds exceptional, although she sounds no different than our Sarah, who was an early achiever. And I know that when I asked you about this work and what's this all about for you, and you just said passion. You just have a lot of passion for this. Where did that come from personally?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the passion comes from being with the young women. And I think that the position that I've had, all the many positions I've had at Ignite, have helped to build what I think is the next solution, is the solution for what is going to create a much more representative democracy. And a lot of the times when I'm working with our young women, they don't know how to take their passion into action. And so a lot of what I feel like my core role is to help demystify what that process looks like. And so, you know, in the early days when we were starting to think about how can I help you run for office? How can I help you feel like you can actually have a turn in that? A lot of it was like, the first step is actually filing paperwork. And so just the demystification of like, you actually have a form that you fill out, you submit it, you have signatures, and then it's a stamp, and then you can move forward. And so going through kind of the nuts and bolts of what the process actually looks like, and then doing it in community has been a lot of the secret sauce of Ignite in supporting these young women as they are defining what their passions are. And, you know, as they're evolving as humans, also they're redefining what their passions are because they are having different lived experiences. And so for me, a lot of what my passion was in the early days was really thinking about what does immigration policy look like? My family came in waves to America. My mom came before I did. I came 2 years after I was born. My dad couldn't come until I was 7 years old because of just what policy looked like, right? So American policy has impacted me before I even got to America. And so demystifying that, just connecting those dots, has been a core component to how do you support this next generation in engagement and in taking their first step, because that's all you need to do, right, is take the first step and put your name in the ring.
Well, having that immigrant experience and having your family that was determined clearly and strong clearly and cohesive enough to stay on task over such a long period of time. And many families have that experience. They have to have way more determination to be a family than those of us who were just born here. So there's way more passion, I would say, there for that issue and knowledge of what that experience is like. So you've told me that you're a breast cancer survivor and you're also a mom. So would you say that each of these pieces also come to inform who you are and what you care about, what you're passionate about?
Yeah. And both of those two like pieces of my identity are so woven together, right? So I was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2017. We are obviously ending October with Breast Cancer Awareness Month. It's also Filipino Heritage Month too. All the things about my identity this month. And, you know, when you get diagnosed with breast cancer at a really young age, you have all of these questions about what does this mean for my career? What does this mean for my life? What does this mean for my relationships? And that has been a core piece of like how I decided to even want to be a mom, because there was a lot of questions that you have to decide and think about with your care team early on before you even start treatment to make a decision about a future life that you do or don't know if you're going to actually be able to live, right? And so actually the toughest decisions as I was going through that process was like the parts that were not about me, but the parts that were about a future human that I didn't even know yet. And so I think, you know, there's been a lot of advocacy in my role as a breast cancer survivor in helping people understand what does it even mean to advocate for yourself as a patient? What does it mean to lower the age for mammograms? What does it mean to understand fertility and insurance and like working on that from a policy angle as well? And simultaneously amongst all of that, I did some work locally. We have a healthcare commission that I joined in 2017. I was appointed to by our mayor. year. And I was the youngest person serving on that commission. And I was also the only cancer survivor serving on that commission. And so a lot of those lived experiences were so incredibly huge for that commission to help understand what the community could be experiencing, are experiencing. And we also were the commission and leadership for the healthcare work in the community during the beginning and through the first 2 years of COVID. So that was a lot on our shoulders and a lot on our plates as we were managing all of that. And then being a parent is a choice, obviously, for me. And my husband and I worked really hard to be parents. And we adopted our son. And for our daughter, she actually started her journey in 2017 as a frozen egg. And through a lot of science, an amazing Dr. Amy and my cousin Jill, who was our surrogate, and her entire family that supported us through the process. And obviously, my mom and my husband and everyone around us. We are so excited that we have a very 99.9 percentile in height and weight 19-month old right now. That's going to be 20 months in just a couple days. And she is gorgeous. And she is just the sheer picture of what does it mean to be resilient, because she herself was resilient even from her initial days, because we actually thought she was about a 20-25% chance of actually being able to become an embryo and to be implanted. And so we are deeply grateful, but it's also a story that we share because not a lot of cancer survivors have the opportunity to go down this path and to have a successful outcome as a part of the journey. And so, like I said, both of them go very much intertwined. And my daughter has come with me to Ignite events. She has come with me to advocate for fertility for cancer survivors because it is a key component to healthcare and for us to have the right to choose if and when we want to have children.
Wow, there is so much packed in that story right there. And I happen to have seen a photograph of her, and she's mini me.
On stage, she's a total mini me. There's a photo of her at our last conference, literally not just one microphone, but two microphones, just holding them, babbling along.
So what I'm trying to do is give young women voice, and guess what? She got one.
It's working.
What you're explaining so beautifully here is how every piece of your life experience, things that you can feel really grateful for, things that were maybe challenges, things that were hard, each one of them is your experience. And what I'm hearing is that there's an opportunity for you to represent a whole lot of other people if you step up into a more public advocacy role, like this notion that somehow you knew at a young age to freeze eggs when you were given a diagnosis, that you could be clear-headed enough to have that process done to make this possible. Does everyone have that experience, or did you just get really lucky, or were you just that smart?
I am a smart human, and I have an incredible mother. My mother was actually working in my GYN's office during diagnosis. She actually called to tell me that my biopsy was positive, and she then got to work for Dr. Amy, who's a fertility, like, just amazing human. And Dr. Amy and I had an appointment, like, right after my surgery consult to make those decisions. And she, you know, laid the path out for me, asked me questions I didn't even know to think about asking. And like, to be honest, like, now there is a breast cancer community that exists. One, sadly, because there are so many of us, but two, like, this wasn't really a huge topic of conversation even in 2017. And so I think there are a lot more advocates because it's our life. It's literally our life. It's whether or not we have access to treatment. It's whether or not we can have kids. It's whether or not we have access to even insurance with pre-existing condition. Like, this is quite a pre-existing condition. It's all the way from, like, as silly as, like, advocating for your mastectomy bra that you need to have, because having a mastectomy shifts the overall footprint of your entire body. And how are you going to carry that? And the mastectomy mastectomy bras do a world of wonder and are just different. And so silly to say that we have to advocate for mastectomy bras. And it's silly because it's like, why do we have to advocate for a mastectomy bra? But it is a reality. Like even our bras are written up in insurance policy. And so the connection of like each piece of like my daily life and the decisions I have to make of my mastectomy bra to a piece of legislation that has been created are so intertwined. And so that's what we're doing every day at Ignite, is connecting the dots. And sometimes, you know, in this current generation, there is a lot less of that because they see it themselves and they are experiencing it on a daily basis. But I think that that is a core piece as we are thinking about the last couple of days, as we get to this very tumultuous, different, all the adjectives of this particular election cycle up and down the ballot. What does this mean for this next generation as they have stepped up in their own civic and political leadership in this particular moment?
And so I feel, since you're bringing up this election, that it's like I have to prepare for two very different, it seems like very different outcomes. And also what I felt come in was just a few days ago, the first zing of a fear about one particular outcome. Like, what if? Okay, well, that's not healthy. And I can't spend 4 years in fear because I know that's not good for me. So like, given I'm not in high school or college at this point, but what could people, let's say, who have aged out of your exact programs, how can we think about the political arena or the community at large, like how we're going to live in this society? What can you talk about there?
Well, I mean, our generations know that this is the long run, that it is not just one election that decides every single thing, and that there is going to be another election, and it's going to happen very soon. And so I think a couple things. One, I think that we all have young people in our lives that we can continue to talk about voting with, that we can continue to process this election cycle with. I think that there is still a lot of opportunity, if they haven't voted yet, to get them to the polls before the 5th. I think that there's an opportunity for generations to still encourage Gen Zers to mobilize their own peers and to still connect with their peers as we get closer to the 5th. And then I think that there is still this large component in terms of the long game, is there's going to be more to do. November 5th is a finish line for many reasons, but there is going to be a lot of work to do no matter what. And so I think the question is, how do we continue to support young women as they are building their own careers? How do we support them by, one, believing in them? Two, how do we actually give them the opportunities? Like, so if I have an opportunity, how do I uplift a young woman into that opportunity to make it very tangible? Or how do I actually invest in them? So it's like thinking about like Sharia 16, right? How many more Sharias are there across the country that are also 16 that need to know that we have their back today, tomorrow, and for the next like 10 to 15 years as they get to their next generation?
You know, I read an article, I think it was in the LA Times, on the incredible number of female political leaders that have come out of the Bay Area. And it made me think of Ignite, you know, among others, Emerge being another. Is there a climate there that has allowed for a real kind of a breeding ground for support for women organizers and politicians?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have it a couple different ways, right? There are a lot of programs in the Bay Area that are specifically targeting women to become political leaders. Ignite is at the, you know, early set age of that, right? As we're building ambition and giving them tools and the environment. And then there are organizations that continue on the path, from some of them a nonpartisan lens, some of them a much more partisan lens. And then I think the other perfect storm within the Bay Area is that the fundraising ability in this community is top notch. And so the way that they organize donors, the way that they do events, just the level of resources within the Bay Area is key. And so I think when you have training programs, you have women who are serving in roles all up and down the state and then within the local community that are doing really great work, you have the role model to see and to be. And like, I just think about, oh my gosh, in my early part of my career at Ignite, we used to do these statewide conferences and they would either be in San Francisco or in LA. And so in San Francisco, we actually always had like 30 different electeds from all across the Bay Area that were from city council, school board seats, all the way to statewide positions. And like, it was so amazing to kind of see the plethora of all of these role models that would sit and have lunch with our young women, and they themselves would demystify what it meant for them to run for office, how much money they had to raise, how they asked for money, all the way to like what it was like to serve in their community, the issues that they dealt with because of their clothing, the issues they dealt with on social media. I think everything under the sun. I mean, our young women, they do not have a filter in the way that they ask questions, because this is a key opportunity to be able to like actually hear and learn from a city council member, a judge, a mayor throughout that process. And then how different that has been and has grown over the years as we are building those conferences across the country, and how there have been larger plethoras of women who are serving in those positions so that we can actually invite them, because that was hard. Like when we started in LA, it was actually a little challenging to find a large number of women, like 30 women to show up on a Saturday. And now it's still, you know, it's not the easiest thing to do, but like there's definitely a lot more opportunity now. So I think if the Bay Area was known for helping to train and build the next generation of women politicians, I would love that headline. I think that's great.
Well, that's how I saw it. That is actually, I thought, okay, you guys are sort of under the surface because these are young women that you're talking about, but then they do go on to graduate. Is there a support system with people who have graduated from the program to come back? And do you keep tabs on like how many graduates and where they are? Do you have that kind of information?
We have data on different pockets of our programming. We have lots of tracking mechanisms internally. We've gotten sophisticated over the years with a data management system now, but we definitely have a lot. We've tracked a lot of our outcomes. And I will say in the early days, we didn't know what some of those outcomes were going to be. I mean, we started with training young women to run for office. And so that was the core outcome. Were they running for office on their campus? Were they running for office in their community? So those spreadsheets are nice and full, right? And then as we grew, we started to train young women to apply to boards and commissions. We started to train them on how to register voters and how to mobilize voters. And we started to train them on how to actually get on a campaign. And then all of our legislative advocacy work, how to actually do policy. And so now we have metrics for each of those types of political leaders. And it's giving us data to help us understand, one, what works best. Because since we're a national organization, like you can't do everything in Los Angeles. You can't do everything in San Francisco or like in Tulsa or in Minneapolis. You kind of have to pick and choose what's going to be the right program for that community at that time. And so the data helps us understand what makes the most sense in each of these zip codes as we are doing programming across the country.
So you mentioned that there are something like thousands of boards and commissions in any decent sized city.
Yeah.
That blew my mind. And the point being, if you care, figure out, like, what do you care about?
Yeah, there's literally something. Like, when we did the first search back in 2017, with, I think I did, oh my gosh, I did, I think, 10 boards and commissions trainings that year in Georgia, in New York, in California, in Texas. And like the first across the board that are like, oh, I could be on a bike commission. I could be on the library commission. I could be on the, you know, insert what they were deeply, like back to your original question, like what are they most passionate about? So they could connect their clear passion to actually serving in this commission. And so we demystified the process. They're like, oh my gosh, it's just like I do a resume and I answer like 5 to 7 questions and send my like contact information. And for most commissions, that literally is all you needed for these local ones. And then they do an interview process. So like our training literally goes through like, what is a board and commission? How do you find it in your zip code? And like each one is different, right? So like some of them are by zip code, some of them are by county, some of them are by city. So it all kind of just depends. But that's part of the process, is like what makes sense for you. And then connecting the dots of like what you care most about to something that exists. And then I will share a story in Texas. One of our students didn't like any of the commissions that existed. And so she actually petitioned her city council to create an arts commission in Dallas-Fort Worth. And she served on that commission for 4 years.
Wow. So you're making me think, Sarah, here's the deal. I am a psychologist, but I'm a regenerative farmer. That is my passion right now. This land that I live on, I'm madly in love with, and I have a vision for it. And it's been a lot in the last several years to learn about it and then make changes and try things, get information on what works. And I'm just breaking in the last year into grants and programs that are out there offered for farmers, which it's expensive to actually transition to regenerative. There's a lot more support for being, you know, commercial style, conventional agriculture, which in my estimation isn't going to be good for the planet long term. It's not good for the food we eat. It's not good for the humans that eat the food, right? That's that cycle. So I care so much about that. And there are programs, but they're sort of hidden. I have, with a lot of tenacity, I used to be called stubborn. Now I think of it as tenacious, but let's use me as an example here. So I don't know of a commission or an organization or a whatever. So I can look and say, is there a regenerative farmers organization in my area? Or, I mean, we're in the country, or I don't know. And, you know, if there is one, I'm 65. You want me to go get busy, right? It's not just the young folks. It's like, let's get women to get out there and engage around what we care about.
Yeah. I'm sure you already know this, but there is a statewide regenerative agricultural community forum.
I didn't think to look. See, this is what you're doing for me.
Yeah, I mean, but that's it. It's so funny. I actually have a slide that says Google is your friend. That could be up for debate, obviously, in the future. But I think that there is something that we are all passionate about, excited about. Sometimes we're actually like really horrified by it. Or I mean, like for my breast cancer, I'm not passionate about breast cancer. I'm passionate about being alive. I'm passionate about living. And so I think sometimes it's the passion, and it's also like, you know, sometimes it's the, I just need this to not exist in the world. I would love for cancer to not exist in the world. That would be nice. But I think there is something under the sun that, one, you can find community with, and then two, that you can serve a role in to move it forward. And sometimes, you know, a lot of students have asked me like, well, this is going to take a lot of time, like being an advocate, joining a board or commission, running for office, for goodness sake, is going to take a lot of time. And I say, true. And so like, you're going to have to decide for you at your moment right now, where do you want to allocate your time? because if it doesn't make sense to serve on a board or commission right now because you're going to miss 99% of the meetings, then that's not your moment. And so one of the things I talk a lot about with our young people is how do you go in and out of advocacy so that you can find the moments that you feel like you're all in, because we're not going to be all in every single day of our entire life. And that's because life happens. I got cancer. I had a baby. One day we woke up in September in California and the sky was orange. And so like every day is going to look really different. And so sometimes, and this is part of the overall movement, right? At Ignite, we are building a movement. It is not just about doing this for fun for 5 days or leading up to an election cycle. We're talking about how do we change the next generation and the generation after that in the way that they participate in our democracy and the way they lead our democracy and how is our democracy represented. And so I think it's all of those different pieces, and we all are going to need to take a break sometimes.
And what I think about is how this leads to regenerative society, because as I've learned, every living system has ecosystems and it requires diversity. It requires healthy inputs. If there's an input that is poisoning one group or another, or harming one group or another, you have to kind of find that and identify it and see what you can do about that. If this pesticide is killing some of the things I want, that could be a problem. We need to look at that. And what I just learned, just to stay on the subject of breast cancer for a second, is that underwire bras actually are known to increase the risk of breast cancer, apparently. And so why do we have those? We need to not have those, maybe, if it actually is true. But the other thing is that when we have less female representation in our communities, in our society, in our politics, what does that lead to as a people? An out of balance culture, perhaps.
Yeah. And that's what we're living in right now. And that's why there needs to be a seismic shift in who is representing us in democracy, who's representing us in Congress, who's representing us in every single branch of government, and then all the way down to our most local bodies of government. And so that's a lot of what we are doing at Ignite on a daily basis, is how are we not just building ambition in these young women to serve in these roles, but we're also helping to shepherd this existing culture shift. So as these young women take these positions, that they are seen and believed to be and expected to be viable political leaders and political actors. Because until we have a representative democracy, and I'm not just talking about gender parity for gender parity's sake, but I'm talking about if Congress, we'll use that as an example, actually look like the overall census, what would that do? What would it do? Like, I'm just curious, would it actually meet the needs of the humans that live in this country? Would it meet the needs of the land of this country? Would it meet the needs of the future of this country?
Because the lived experience of a female in America is different than the lived experience of a male in America. And so just based on that, like some of the issues we've already talked about, what your life experience has been has led you to awarenesses that actually can help uplift many others. And the same thing is true for gender. Well, and what's tricky, you know, I'm going to say right now, but really it's been a while now, but how, you know, party politics, how do we not other? I would call it othering. Can you speak to giving us some thoughts about how to not other? I mean, one thing is to stick with issue, because it feels a little desperate in terms of rights at some points. And so how do we not lose our cool?
That's a good question. I mean, I think about what does an inclusive democracy look like? One in which people actually feel safe enough to engage in democracy. I mean, there is a reason why voter turnout is not as high across the country, across many different demographics. That is a reason. That's not just something happened that day. And so I think about what do we need in this country to, one, feel like it can be an inclusive democracy where people feel safe enough to actually participate and they feel so celebrated in their participation. And so I think a lot of that is the way in which we build the communities that we exist in. How do we continue to have this dialogue that doesn't feel like I have to shut down every 2 seconds, that I engage in any level of dialogue? Ignite is a nonpartisan organization, and we have had a lot of, you know, moments, micro and macro, and really digesting what the past 8 years have looked like and what the next 4 could potentially look like. And I think in the ecosystem that we live in, though we are a nonpartisan organization, it doesn't mean that we are immune to party politics. And so I think that there is a lot to continue to consider for us as an organization, obviously for the young women that participate with us, and then for folks that continue to do the work from an external landscape.
It was interesting. I was at a women's retreat last week, and I found that one of my barriers to taking action sometimes is I don't know enough yet. I don't have mastery yet. I need to go get another degree. You know, really it shows up as I don't know enough. And I actually, since that day, have heard that said by other people, like, I don't have the experience. And I don't know, but it sounds like maybe more of a women's issue than a man's issue. I could be wrong, but what would you say to that voice in me?
Yeah, stop listening to it.
Be quiet. You go sit over there.
Yeah, don't even exist here.
But it's there. It's in there. I don't know how it got in there.
Oh, I'm sure she's in there. That's what we call the roommate we can't let go of yet. We actually have a public speaking training where we literally talk about the roommate inside your head, because she exists. Like, as much as we don't want her to exist there, she exists. Jennifer Lawless has done a lot of research around just where the gender gap starts to shift. And it's interesting, in elementary school and all the way through like sixth grade, young girls and young boys are stepping into leadership positions at the exact same rate. And then young boys are starting to get a little bit of a head start in high school. And then they like shoot off in college. Like, it just becomes so big in variance. And so when you were talking about that, of just the gender differences there, it remind me of that research, because it hasn't changed much over the past 20 years.
Even with a program such as Ignite, or are you saying Ignite is just seeking to change that differential?
That's been a core component of why we exist in the world, is why we need to get to the specific age group of 14 as that core piece, because it's still true to a certain degree. And I think the other component that I was thinking about earlier, when you're like, I need all of these things to be able to do what I want to do. Oh my gosh, I have heard that time and time again from young people. Like, I need to go to law school to run for office. I need to have a PhD in regenerative energy in order to actually run this climate org. I need to X, Y, or Z, and feel like they have to have all of these degrees. And like, our research has backed that up also, is this want and this need to have that. And I think to a certain degree, that's because a lot of what we've heard and seen in the field is that young women, particularly, and especially if you look like me and you are a young woman of color, you study harder. You want to have your best foot forward. And it's interesting, like when I was a little bit younger, I would get some of these different like recruitment emails. And I'm like, whoa, that's like a job that's like way, like way, like my 10-year self. And my husband would be like, what? You could do that yesterday with your eyes closed, probably. And I'm like, That's not untrue, okay? And so even I have the fun roommate that sometimes sits in my head, and I don't want her to live there either. But sometimes it's us. Like, we are sometimes our biggest barrier, unfortunately. And that's why we need humans in our network to mirror back that that is not the truth.
Right. You're not going to have to. Well, you know, in some cases, I have to really argue my point to shift a practice we're doing on this ranch that has been done for 45 years that I would like to change. And I've done some reading, but what comes back, let's say, is who's doing that practice in avocados in Santa Barbara County? And it's like, I don't want to have to jump through that hoop because I just know this makes sense and let's try it, because the upside of it being true is good for...
It's going to outweigh the benefit, yeah.
Right. So it's interesting because for me, I have to take leaps of faith almost on my... I mean, it's not based just on intuition. I don't just have a vibe that something may be true. I read about it. I do. It's just that I don't have the pinpoint information that tells me for sure. And I think the idea that Shreya had this sense that she thought there needed to be more information. It's like, well, but maybe that's just me. Maybe, you know, that is it just me? That barrier for us to get past is like, whenever you're thinking, maybe it's just me, probably not.
Yeah. Well, Stacey, I just think about like when Anne introduced Ignite to me, I was like, oh, okay. So what's the vision? Because like what we do at Ignite every single day is not the norm. Like when I tell people about like we're actually in the business of trying to create a more representative democracy, and we are working to do that by building the next generation of political leaders, it's not like that's a regular day program. And so like when you're trying to like sell it to the schools, it's like, well, it's not about literacy. It's not just straight up leadership development, and it's not like about STEM. And then from like a college perspective, they're like, well, we already have college Republicans and college Dems. And so like trying to get that super clear in the articulation and how you would benefit from this work has been an evolution all on its own. And so I think like, if I sat down in the office or like in my room, in my office to think about like, well, that's not going to work. That's not going to work. What we're looking at right now, 2024, of like what the possibilities could be for this election cycle and what this means. And like just seeing the energy of young people right now, what will that drive into for 25, 26, and specifically for 2028, when they will be... this generation of Gen Z will be the largest voting bloc alongside millennials. And that is going to have a seismic shift, even larger than the one that we're feeling right now, which feels like already so tumultuous. But like that will actually be, they will be part of the leadership of what voting will look like for the next presidential election cycle. And so I have to think about, what am I doing right now? What is Ignite doing right now that is going to set them up for success because of them being the next generation?
That gives me chills and it gives me hope. And that's a good thing sitting right here. I guess we all do maybe get a little short-sighted. And for you to be talking in those longer terms is just exactly what we need to do. Don't just think of it. I mean, of course we have short-term goals, but really thinking beyond that and having faith in what's coming up. And I know the feminist majority statistics on women, I mean, I've just heard a lot of statistics that say the wave is coming. And so we're here. And so your work has been really effective and continues to be so. So thank you for that hope and that excitement. Now, as we have to wrap up our conversation, are there some action items? Are there some key takeaways that you really would love for us to have as we go? And how might we support the vision of Ignite? Yeah. Just give us some thoughts here.
Yeah. I mean, I think the most immediate thing, as we're just a couple of days, this is what we call in the campaign world, GOTV weekend. And so get out the vote. And so if you personally have not voted yet, make a plan to do so. Find that polling location. Find your ballot buried underneath the mail right now, probably, and take a look at the trusted sources that you have to help fill out that ballot. Because here in California, we always have long ballots, but across the country, you've got lots of choices to make. And then I think from a much more long-term standpoint, start to trust these Gen Zers. Start to trust their leadership and start to think about what work are they doing right now. The oldest Gen Zer right now is about 27, 28 years old. How do you make room for them in your organization, on your commission, in your community to start to lend their voice? And I think that's the best way to support Ignite is to start to trust Gen Zers. Folks can obviously visit Ignite as you think about what the last push is. If you need some of those resources to get out the vote yourself, we can help you there. But from a much more longer term process, there are lots of different ways to tap into helping Gen Zers realize their potential and introducing them to Ignite.
Okay, so yes, I'm pulling out my voting materials, and then sometimes they're complicated and I don't understand what's being said. What do you have to say to those of us that need interpreting?
Yeah, I mean, we at Ignite actually do ballot parties across the country with our young women where they sit around with their pizza or their donuts, whatever time of day they're doing it, in their pajamas even sometimes. And they literally go through, we have a template that they can go through to walk through the ballot. But for folks that are doing this at home, probably just right now or maybe tomorrow, getting ready for Tuesday, I have two awesome resources. One, you can go to your local League of Women Voters. They have amazing guides that will help you, particularly to demystify some of the propositions and ballot initiatives that sometimes I don't know if it's a yes vote for what or a no vote for what. So in addition to the candidates, they'll do all the propositions on your ballot. And then another tool that our participants use is called ballotready.org. And you can hop on that website and literally put in your address, and then it will give you all of the nonpartisan guides on the candidates, and then also on the initiatives or propositions that are on your particular ballot.
Okay, that is so helpful. Thank you. Well, this has been so helpful and interesting and grounding for me personally, and I hope for y'all listeners as well. Just the personal is the political is one of my big takeaways from you. It's not any different than that. So don't make it more complicated.
Don't need to overthink.
Don't overthink it. That's my roommate's problem.
Yes. Let the roommate overthink. Don't listen to the roommate.
Yeah. Okay. Well, great. Thank you so much, Sarah, for being with us today, and we'll be in touch.
Thank you, Stacy. Thanks, everybody.
I will be taking a break from releasing an episode on November 7th, returning on November 14th, with another insightful and inspiring conversation. In the meantime, be sure to check out past episodes featuring incredible guests sharing their valuable wisdom. Thank you for tuning in. If today's conversation inspired you, you can help us reach more people by sharing this episode with friends or leave a review. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. For additional resources, you can visit my website and stay connected with me on social media. A big thanks to the amazing team that makes this podcast possible, including Phil Svitek, Brianna Phipps, Leah Pellegrini, Melissa Walbridge, and Courtney Hamilton. When we all work together, we can create a world where positive change is not just possible, but inevitable.